Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, this is John Zadak, TV voice of the Cincinnati Reds, and you're up for Late Night Reds Talk.
What is going on? Welcome into Late Night Reds Talk, the live show and podcast that loves the Cincinnati Reds. I am joined by my pal Clay Snowden for a very special edition as we take a look at what the 2024 Cincinnati Reds might look like. Me and Clay have poured a lot of labor and love into this project. We hope that you guys will like it. Just kind of taking a look at the future and seeing what we think the 2024 team will look like, some things we might like to see, some different ideas that we have to build the next great Reds team. So let me go ahead and bring in Clay Snowden. Clay, what's going on, my man?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me. I know that we love to talk about the 2024 team, especially with the way that the 2022 teams look this year.
Well, we do want to preface this. We haven't completely given up on 2023. Me personally, I think the Reds will probably kind of do the same thing they did this year. You know, maybe add some FAMs and some Solanos. I think they'll try to have a competitive team next year. But as you'll see, as we kind of get into the financials, we really think that 2024 is probably lines up more for everything else. So we're not punting completely on 2023, but we're hoping 2024 is the year that things really kick into gear. Before we do any further on that, Clay, what is your thoughts on 2023? Do you think, are you a little different than me? Do you think they have any chance?
No, I don't see 2023 as the year where they, you know, start building too much towards the future. I could see them adding one piece, and we'll get into that later. They have, and we'll get into all this, I don't want to spoil it, but the money to kind of start building towards the future. So if there's a 2023 free agent that this team loves, they can sign that to a multiple year deal, and it doesn't really change the, I guess, window of comp of, you know, their competitive window. It doesn't really change anything. So I think 2023 will be similar to this year. But when I say similar to this year, I'm not even talking about a record. I'm talking about team construction. You know, that 3-20 whatever start really killed everything this year. I think they're more of a 500-ish, maybe a little bit below 500 team. And I think that's what we'll see in 2023.
All right, very good. Well, before we go any further, I want to, as always, tell you about our friends at Bet Online, our partners here at Late Night Reds Talk, part of the Believe Network. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to wager all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. Bet Online continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head on over to Bet Online today or use your mobile device to join today and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50, that is BLEAV50, again, that is BLEAV50, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online is where the game starts. Thanks as always to Bet Online for their continued support of Late Night Reds Talk. All right. Well, let's jump right into it, Clay. We are going to kind of take a dive into what we think the 2024 Reds will look like. First, I want to kind of give everyone an idea of where the Reds stand financially, as obviously that is a sore subject, but an important subject nonetheless as we kind of look at the future. So here's where the Reds are guaranteed contract-wise, and this is what we were kind of talking about a little bit earlier. 2023, the Reds just still have $44.6 million on the books. This is not including any of the players that they decide to keep in arbitration, but these are the guys that are guaranteed contracts. Votto's owed $25 million, Moustakas $16 million, and King Griffey Jr. still pulling $3.6 million next year. 2024, both Votto and Moustakas have options that year. We expect that probably both of those contracts will be declined. Votto has a $7 million buyout. Moustakas has a $4 million buyout. And our good friend King Griffey Jr. has his last year of his $3.6 deferred million dollars. So that totals $13.6 million in 2024. So again, that's not a whole lot. That's I mean, in terms of guaranteed money, that's very, very slim. But then 2025, there is absolutely nothing on the book. And we will talk about this a little bit more as the show goes on, but we estimate that the Reds have at least $70 million in 2024 to spend on either free agents or extending players to contracts or players that they could bring in via trade that costs some money. So the Reds are going to have quite a bit of money to spend. It'd be nice if it could be even closer to maybe $100 million, which would get kind of closer to the 2020 payroll pre-COVID. I've heard a lot about the nasty word, rebuild, and we're trying to avoid that here on the show. And everyone goes, well, this is the same thing as 2015. I don't think that's so. And if you're watching here, if you see the graphic, the Reds had so much more money tied up at the end of 2015, going into 2016, 2017, into 2018. In 2016, the Reds had $85.6 million on the books, 2017, $70.1 million on the books. And then beyond 2018, so this is not just 2018, but 2018 and beyond, and this is several years after, you know, the rebuild started, they had $260.9 million in guaranteed contracts beyond 2018. So the Reds are starting on a much, much cleaner slate than they were back then. Another big piece is the farm system rankings. This is, if you're watching, this is the Baseball America Reds farm system rankings over the years. Baseball America has not updated since the beginning of the year. So the Reds are at number 7 right now, which is their best since 2011. Best before that since 2008. So it's been a long time since the Reds had a farm system this good. I know Arm has said he thinks they're probably closer to like a top 5, maybe even a top 3 at this point. Arm Layton, of course, our friend at justbaseball.com. Always check his work out. But if you see, if you're looking at this graphic, I mean, the Reds have been in the middle of the pack to the back of the pack pretty much just about every year between 2012 through 2020. So this is a much different system than we've seen in quite a while, and there's plenty of reasons for optimism with the Reds farm system. Kind of looking at the upcoming free agents at the end of the season, not a whole lot. I mean, there's not a whole lot of free agents left for this team. Donovan Solano, Hunter Strickland, Mike Minor, he has an option that we assume will be declined. Albert Almora Jr. and Buck Farmer are the big free agents this year. Buck Farmer made the list. That's how the free agent class looks like. And then, of course, we already talked about Votto, Moustakas, and then Luis Sessa is at the end of 2023. And then lastly, kind of just giving you an idea of payroll. If you're watching here on the show, this is a graph of the NL Central payroll in the Castellini era since Castellini took over as the majority owner of the Reds. As you see, the Reds have been pretty well middle of the pack in the NL Central, you know, kind of up and down. This is the first year that the Brewers have been ahead of the Reds since, I believe, 2012. The Reds have pretty much always stayed above the Pirates outside of when the Reds were really in the heat of their first rebuild. So, you know, the Reds have been above about 115 to 120 at least the last couple years. that's what we're hoping is the bottom of the Reds as we kind of get into the next contention window. We're hoping that that 147 in 2020, the expected payroll, it didn't end up paying that much because of COVID. But we're hoping, you know, maybe the Reds can get back up to that 140 again. It's hard to tell which direction they'll go, but I do feel pretty confident that they are going to be spending probably at least $120 million as we kind of get into hopefully 2024 and the next string of contention. So I will shut up after kind of, you know, giving you that rundown. Bring in Clay. Clay, what is your overall thoughts kind of looking at, you know, the Reds, where they're at financially, where they're at farm system-wise? What's your kind of overall thoughts here as we wrap up 2022, looking at 2023, 2024, and beyond?
Yeah, I think it's important to really take a 10,000-foot view of this payroll. As you can see from the graph on the screen, which those on Spotify don't get to see this beautiful graph that Nick put way too much time into, they're usually around the middle of the NL Central. This is not a team, you know, we being Reds Twitter loves to talk about how cheap they are. And at times they are cheap, and I'm not going to deny that. But this isn't a team like the Oakland Athletics or some other teams that we've seen with, you know, the Pirates with, you know, $30, $40 million payrolls. There's another thing to consider as well. This all depends on how many young players are on your team. If your team is full of really good young talent, your payroll is probably naturally going to be smaller. You can also be a team full of expensive players that are past their prime and have a large payroll. So payroll's not the number one indicator of how good your team is. Now, of course, if you look at the top payrolls, it's going to be a lot of the best teams. That's true. And when I think about payroll, especially going into 23, 24, how many of the positions and pitchers are going to be taken up by players still on, you know, their beginning contracts and still under team control where they're not making really market value, and how will that reflect the payroll?
Yeah, I mean, just for an example, I think the Reds starting rotation at the beginning of this year was significantly more expensive than the Brewers was. And obviously the Brewers have a, you know, a much better rotation than the Reds, but yeah, payroll can be very deceiving. You can have a $130 million payroll and, you know, 20 of your 25 players are on league minimum deals. And, you know, that goes a lot farther than a team that is over $200 million that only has a few of those guys that are on league minimum deals. And they're having to sign a bunch of free agents. Crappy starting pitchers are expensive.
Yeah. You know,
Mike Minor's $10 million. I don't think that's that crazy.
Jordan, you know, Lyles is $7 million.
Yeah. So, you know, the most important thing for the Reds, and really just about any team outside of maybe, I mean, obviously the Dodgers have the number one farm system in baseball, so it's still important. They're doing both, which is makes it almost impossible to keep up with. But that's a story for another time. But the most important thing is developing your own players and having that core. And then, you know, you can worry about spending around that. But if you don't have that, there's only a couple teams that can really sustain it. Even a team like the Angels, they're spending a ton of money. They're in the top five in payroll, and they're not getting anywhere. So, yeah, you know, it definitely a lot more depending on that. All right, let's move on to our three guiding principles for the Reds going forward. Clay, I'm going to give you the honor of starting. Share with the folks your three principles for the Reds going forward.
So just to give you an idea of how long Nick and I have been constructing this, we actually came up with this before the deadline. But this is a principle that I have for everything going forward, and that's to acquire the best trade packages regardless of positional needs. So instead of what, you know, some fans were saying, we need an outfielder, let's go get one that's close to MLB ready. Well, what does that tell you? If a team is willing to give up somebody who's close to MLB ready with tons of years of control left, and they have had, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons of watching this player and they're ready to give up on him, that usually tells you all you need to know about them. Now, I know you'll say, you know, Jake Fraley's an example, and that's true. But, you know, we gave up an all-star to get, you know, Jake Fraley in a package, and Jake Fraley still has his limitations. So to me, it's acquired the best possible package you can get. And the Reds did this to an extent at the deadline. I mean, how many shortstops do they have now? Because you can move players around, and these players are assets. That's what they are. I know it sounds dehumanizing, but prospects are assets, and you can trade them again. My number two principle is bet on player tools and trust your development system. So what that means is continue to take lottery shot tickets if that's what you want to do. If these players have things that you cannot teach, you cannot teach size, you can to an extent teach, you know, athletic ability, but in reality you can't. Bet on tools. So if you have a player with a really good, you know, curveball or something, and you think, okay, I can develop the other pitches, that's the player you should get. Always bet on the players with the most projectable upside, and just trust your development system. They've done a pretty good job developing. You know, most of the players that they traded away are more or less players that they had developed. And then the last, and I know a lot of people won't like this, but bullpen should command the least amount of payroll during roster construction. Now, where the asterisk and caveat comes in here is kind of what I mentioned earlier. If your whole roster is under a bunch of, you know, $700,000 contracts of young players, then maybe you spend more on your bullpen. And the other thing about the bullpen is look around the league. Evan Phillips, not exactly an established name, is dominating for the Dodgers. Felix Bautista for the Orioles, their closer now, who's electric, 7 years in the minors. Each good team and bad teams have random Joe Mantiplies pop up. And that's just what it is, because it's small sample size typically. You know, you get maybe 70 innings. That's not that large of a sample size. The bullpen, and you'll see from my roster construction, this doesn't mean only fill it with buck farmers. That's not what this means. That means young, controllable players, maybe like a Art Warren. I know that Nick's big on Art Warren. You know, sign a guy to $4 or $5 million if you want to, but also continue to take those flyers on players. Some of them will pop, and there's just times we've seen it in the past. David Hernandez, you know, Jared Hughes, where sometimes you bring in a guy and they're great, and the next year they're not. So you need a lot of lottery tickets, but the bullpen is something that, in my opinion, you should spend the least amount of money on. So I think, you know, starting pitching, infield, outfield, I'll include catcher and infield. Those are positions that impact the game more often, in my opinion, than one relief pitcher. Now, the bullpen as a whole, it just should not be in a small market team like the Reds. It shouldn't be their top priority with payroll.
Yeah, very good. And I agree with all your points. I want to add a little bit and maybe ask you a question too about kind of the bullpen. I view bullpen more as a luxury. And if you're doing all these other steps well, you'll have more money left over to spend on the bullpen.
Yeah.
It can't be where you're spending, you know, the majority of your money. And I maybe kind of look at the 2012 Reds team. They had a great core. They had Joey Votto. They had Jay Bruce. They had all these players that were, you know, not making all that much money at that point of their career. And they were able to go out and acquire Jonathan Broxton and Sean Marshall and Aroldis Chapman. Cost a little bit of money, cost some assets as well, but they were able kind of to have that luxury because they already had the other stuff in place. And I think part of the reason you don't want to jump the gun and if you don't have the stuff in place is a lot of times you can go out and spend a lot of money on a bullpen and it completely backfired. We saw it with the Rockies a couple years ago. They went and spent like $60 million on their bullpen and all three of the guys they thought were surefire guys all just blew up.
And how often do we see bullpen pieces, especially on expiring deals, get moved at the deadline for not very much? It doesn't cost much. If you're a competing team, you can go out and get the Michael Givens. We saw the Reds do it. Luis Sessa. You know, you can go out and acquire these. Bad teams always have at least one or two good bullpen arms. You can give up somebody years away, typically, for, you know, if the Reds are in contention and they're all, man, we need to improve the bullpen. You can do that at the deadline at a reasonable, you know, expenditure.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of critiques on the Reds bullpen the last couple years, but I also think both years have kind of been the worst case scenario with injuries and just guys that just didn't pan out for whatever reason. So, I mean, I'm not saying they're not without criticism, but I also don't think it should be a giant overreaction into, oh my gosh, you know, they have no idea what they're doing constructing a bullpen. Well, you know, I don't think you want to go too far in the other direction. All right, so my three principles, just kind of adding on to Clay. My first one, and I know Clay's not as strong on this as me, and that's fine. Some good embrace debate moment here. Just kidding. But my first one, and the key word here is strategically lock up young talent early and often. I would really like to see the Reds this offseason start to explore some contract extensions. That doesn't mean they have to extend every single one. Doesn't mean they have to extend Lodolo, Green, Stevenson, and India. If you extend everyone, then your free agent money starts to shrink because you're not going to get these guys to just completely through their early years not take anything. They're going to want a little bit of a raise in those early years. So not everyone, but strategically lock up, see where you can get the most value. An example of this is Luis Castillo, who was just traded. I didn't think the Reds should look to keep Castillo and extend him at his age 30 season, but the Reds could have looked to extend him in 2020, and it's some of this is hindsight, but they could have looked to extend him back in 2020 instead of maybe jumping $16 into Mike Moustakas and maybe just got a couple more years, bought out his last couple years of arbitration and got a couple more years and had you know, him a little bit longer. So strategically locking up young talent, it should be great deals for the team. These are, you know, you're hoping for the Ronald Acuna's, but for every Ronald Acuna, there are plenty of other ones that haven't worked out. There's maybe one might be a sort of subject right now, Fernando Tatis Jr. It's not exactly aging very well. It's a
14-year deal.
14 years.
Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, Johan Moncada. That's three on one team. Now, those are good players. Well, two of them are. But injury and, you know, it's just a disaster right now.
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes you'll get an Acuna. Sometimes you'll get an Ozzie Albies, two on the same team. And sometimes they will really pan out. So it just depends. But I think they should be looking to, you know, find some good deals, seeing what they can get. I think Tyler Stevenson would probably be at the top of my list. Hunter Green probably at the top of my list. But yeah. All right. The next thing, this is probably one of the most controversial, is trade nearly all players of value not extended within 1.5 to 2.5 years of control remaining. So pretty much what the Reds did at the deadline. I think they should be looking to do this. Now, if you've locked up some of your players, they're not going to be at that stage. So if they would have locked up Luis Castillo, going back to the first point, they might not have been at this stage yet where they really, as how they operate, I felt had to trade him. I felt like there was no reasonable choice not to. So that's pretty much what I would be doing. If the qualifying offer sticks around a little bit longer, that does maybe change the trajectory for some players, not all of them. I really wonder if a guy like Jesse Winker, if the Reds knew the qualifying offer was sticking around, if they may have kept him a little bit longer, knowing they had that as insurance. I will never know the answer to that, but that could change the trajectory a little bit on some of them, but that's more of the players that are right at like that threshold that aren't going to bring back those massive returns where that comp pick is almost as valuable as whatever return they would bring back. And then my last thing, spend the remaining money in free agency, specifically targeting short-term contracts, even high risk and or players under 30. So my philosophy on this is I would rather the Reds go out and spend 2 years, $30 million on a, I don't know how old he was, 37-year-old Charlie Morton. So where it's only 2 years. It's not this, you know, big, long pitching contract extension than like a 30-year-old Luis Castillo for $200 million over 8 years. I'd rather have those shorter. So if it doesn't work out, well, you're not stuck with a guy in a bad contract for years and years and years. Bad contracts equal rebuilds, and that's what we want to avoid. We want to avoid any and all rebuilds. And if the Reds do it right, you don't have to rebuild. Look at the team that right down the road from us in Cleveland. They have a payroll a third of the Reds. And year after year after year, they are competitive. They're close to 500. They're competing for playoff spots because they're trading their players early and they're drafting and they're doing all these things that we're talking about.
Yeah, and I want to touch on your first point about locking up young talent. We all have to remember sometimes the player may not want to be locked up. Like, it's not a video game where you just force contracts as long as the money looks good according to a computer. I think too often as fans, we all assume every one of these players wants to stick in Cincinnati and wants to sign a long-term deal and wants to not kind of bet on themselves in a way. But I do agree for certain players that is smart. And if I had to add a fourth one here, and I'm only saying this because you mentioned Charlie Morton, mine would be never signing players over 35 years old. And I know that's like, there's so many caveats to that and so many, well, how about Nelson Cruz or how about this? To me, it doesn't matter. Like, I'd rather get burned on the 12 to 15% of deals that work out after 35 than sign up players that are not 35 and see the massive decline that typically happens. The only exception I would have to that is certain bullpen arms, just because of the wear and tear is so much less than other players. But to me, stay away from 35-plus-year-old players. Use the money elsewhere.
Yeah, and the Reds have certainly made a lot of mistakes over the years. We're not here to say they haven't. But the one thing they really haven't made a mistake too often on is extending players. How many players have the Reds not extend? Have Reds fans wanted the Reds to extend, and it backfired? Not many of them. I can think of a lot more examples of players, even myself included, thought were sure things. I thought Johnny Cueto was probably a sure thing back in the day, and the contract never really panned out all that well. There are so many examples of players that we all wanted extended. Maybe not all of us, but a lot of Reds fans wanted extended. Yeah, Scooter, and they're just, you know, so that's, I think, probably the one thing the Reds maybe have done the best over the years. All right, so moving on. This is our 2024 arbitration estimates. I made up these numbers completely myself, so please don't get out your calculator and, you know, get me on this. I'm not an expert, but I just kind of looked at the numbers, what other players in similar situations have gotten, just to kind of give you a rough idea. So here's kind of what we got. I'll just kind of run through this list. I'm not going to explain the whole arbitration process, as I probably would butcher it. Google arbitration. But you have 1, 2, 3, and 4. Basically, 1 is the lowest level. So a player in arbitration 1 is not going to get as much. Up to 4 is the highest. You can't go down. So once you're in arbitration 1, you get $1.5 million. You can never get below that. But the teams also have a right to decline and basically let the players go every year. So we'll probably
non-tender. If you've heard that term before and you were unsure, that's pretty much a team saying, we don't think you're worth your arbitration number. Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't Kyle Farmer non-tendered then re-signed?
Yep. He was non-tendered, re-signed, like I think the same night.
Yeah.
2 years ago, he was tendered a contract this past offseason. But yeah, Kyle Farmer's going to start to get expensive. I have him at $6.5 million. Honestly, I could see him being higher than that by the time he gets. This will be his final year, 2024. Nixon Zell, I have him at 6. He's a crapshoot. He could go way up. He could go way down. I have no idea. That was my best guess. Lucas Sims at $5 million. Jeff Hoffman at $4 million. Tyler Stevenson at $6.5 million. I think he's going to get really expensive quick in his first year of arbitration. Jonathan India at $4 million. Dunn at 3. Antone at 2. Aramis Garcia at 2. Aquino 1.75. Barrero 1.5. Barrero could go up or down, but won't be that much because it's only his first year. And then Fraley at 1.25. So I'd probably say, barring trades, because I think these guys do have trade value and the Reds could look to move them, I think Sims, Stevenson, India, Antone, Barrero, Fraley are probably your for sure still around. I'm surprised Farmer's still on the Reds, to be honest, just because I think he gets so expensive next year. I don't know. Maybe they just kept him around because they want to push Barrero. That might be part of the trajectory in that. I'm not sure. Maybe they just like him as a left-handed masher. Who knows? But I do think, I don't really care. You know, this isn't my money. They're not spending that much right now anyway. So if they're going to pay Kyle Farmer at this point, it's not, you know, whatever. But yeah, I don't see him. Sinzel, flip a coin if he's still here. I have no idea. I really don't. Hoffman, I would be surprised if he's still here. He might get traded at some point. I could see him getting traded this offseason if there's a team that kind of wants him. Dunn, I'd love to see him stick around. Again, he's only made 2 starts, though, for the Reds as we're recording this, so I really, you know, don't know. And then Antone, I mean, I think he'll either be around or be very, very cheap by the time, you know, because he won't have pitched. So I think he'd still be in the system, but he's not going to be making any money, right? Yeah, he's either going to be good enough to earn the money or not injured enough to not cost anything. So I think he'll still be there. I agree. I think Garcia will be gone. I think Aquino probably doesn't make it that long. I love it. You know, man, he's got all the tools, and I just, you know,
besides the bat to ball tool.
Yeah, well, he's got the power, but yeah, besides the bat to ball tool. Yeah, and then I assume Barrero's here unless he's traded, which I could see Barrero by the time 2024 gets around getting traded, you know, as the Reds have a bunch of shorts coming in. And then Jake Fraley. We were high on Jake Fraley long before this recent hot streak. Hopefully he's still got the hot streak going whenever we decided to release this, but yeah. Any other thoughts on the arbitrations?
Nope.
Did we beat it to death? All right. So here it is, folks. This is our
30 minutes in, you get the main event.
The main event. This is the projected roster for 2024 if the Reds did not make any trades or any free agents. Obviously, this is not what it's going to look like, but we do think this kind of gives you a general idea of where we kind of think the Reds are. So let's start with the rotation. We'll run it down. We just kind of give our thoughts on it. Clay, we'll save our free agent talk for when we go to our own. But so rotation, we got Hunter Green at the top, Nick Lodolo, Graham Ashcraft, Brandon Williamson, Andrew Abbott. I'll start here. I mean, I love all 5 of these guys. I think these guys are all have a lot of really good potential. I'll start with the top 3. If I'm betting, 2 of those 3 turn out to be legit big league stars. One of them doesn't. I don't know really which one. I just, if you're kind of look through the numbers of players in those, you know, those type situations, that's probably how it pans out more times than not. So not going to count on all 3 of those, but I think banking on 2 of those guys to be legit big league starters, hopefully one of them to be at least kind of a star by that point, is maybe realistic. Clay, let's start with just those 3. Do you agree with that? Do you feel different about those 3?
The chances of all 3 being a 1-2-3 in a rotation is very low. But what there is a chance that either, you know, if Ashcraft or Green do not stick in the rotation, I think both of them would be very good high leverage relievers. So it's not a complete loss. It's not a complete bust. I don't see Lodolo moving to the bullpen, though.
I see Lodolo as the safest starter out of those 3, but the health, that's just the thing. It's hard to predict. Please bless that arm. Man, it's special. And then Williamson and Abbott, you know, I'd say maybe, hey, if one of those 2 are legit starters, I think we'd take that probably right now. I know we both really like Andrew Abbott. He's probably my favorite pitcher in the minor league system right now to watch as a new MILB TV subscriber. Man, he's fun to watch. And Williamson, I mean, he's probably going to get his taste of the big league soon. I would be surprised if he doesn't make a start this season at this point, unless he gets hurt.
Yeah, and, you know, he's one that I was higher on the beginning of the year. Now that I've watched him more and kind of seen I'm not as high on them. Typically, these type of prospects and players, I would say there's a 20 to 25% chance that one of them sticks in a rotation and is, you know, a reliable 30 start big leaguer. It may even be lower than that, but I would put it at 20 or 25% that one of those 2. So right there, I mean, you're probably going to have at least 3 big league, cheap big league starters out of those 5.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the outfield. This is by far the least exhilarating part of the depth chart.
This will move quickly.
We have Matt McLean out in left field just because there's really not a whole lot of options to throw out there unless you're throwing, you know, one of the stars out there. I like McLean a lot. I think he'll be a big league contributor by then. Then we have Nick Senzel, the giant crapshoot. I don't know what to expect. And then I'm going to have Jake Fraley as the he's probably the one outfielder I feel the most confident about. I feel like Jake Fraley in 2024 is probably as the as a left-handed platoon, you know, playing every game as right-handed pitcher, just a lot of games. I feel like he's probably the most. And then we both like Alan Serta filling that other platoon spot as that. Be awesome if it was Aquino that could really kind of stick it and stick there, but we're not banking on that. Clay, what's your thoughts here on the outfield?
No, I agree. And Serta is one of those guys who's going to bang or bust, in my opinion. So it's just time will tell.
He's not much different than Aquino, really. I mean, yeah. they're very similar. So I will see. So that's the outfield. We have some ideas on how to fix that. We'll get to those here in a minute. All right. The exciting part, the infield. Oh, this is exciting. Spencer Steer at third base. Ellie De La Cruz at shortstop. Novelli Marte at second base, Christian Encarnacion Strand at first base, and then we have Jonathan India at DH. We both have some ideas with him we'll get to in a second. We felt that was probably the most likely spot to put him on here. Caveat, I don't think we're saying India in 2024 is a full-time DH, but we think they probably kind of mix and match him a little bit would be kind of our thoughts. This is, Clay, this is the most exciting part of the Cincinnati Reds, in my opinion, going forward, is this infield. Do you agree?
Yeah, there's a lot of high-ranked prospects, star power, potentials to be, you know, the fan favorites, all-star game type potential in a lot of these players.
Yeah, very good. And India, I don't think he sticks at second base. I don't know.
Yeah, you and I discussed this, and we did not know where to put him. At one point, I was saying put him in left field. We said maybe back to third base, maybe here, maybe there. Too short for first base. You don't see many profiles of first base like his profiles. The lamest but simplest reason, like, oh, it doesn't happen. Well, then it probably won't happen, not because it makes sense or not. DH, left field, maybe they just throw him at second. I just think there's better defensive players who could play second without having to push him to the bench. So why not just put him at DH? It's not like there's a huge DH player on this team right now.
Yeah. And then we have Tyler Stevenson behind the plate. We've exhausted that conversation, so we won't dig into why we want him there. But we'll add, if you move him to first base, then you got to start moving other guys around. We don't really think Encarnacion Strand is probably anywhere other than first base or DH. If you start penciling guys into DH, then you're like, well, if you don't have anyone else that we can bring in for DH, we've got a good deal for a great hitter at DH. We can't bring him in for a year. It just makes every part of the roster construction so much more difficult.
Yeah.
All right. To the bench, we have Jose Barrero. Say his name. I'm going to
Daniel Villaheen, which is a catcher in the organization right now in Double A.
A guy that I really like. I really, really enjoy watching him, although I can't say his name. Mike Ciani. And then we have Kyle Farmer. We both don't think he's going to be here, but again, we're just filling out the roster. So we have Kyle Farmer on there. I'll start. I think Barrero is going to get every chance to be the Red shortstop. If Barrero takes off the rest of this year, he has a great 2023. Ellie De La Cruz, I think, will get moved somewhere to another position. Barrero, it's his position to lose. Now he's gonna have to perform really, really well to keep it. But I do think Barrero is probably the best defensive shortstop in the organization up until Edwin Arroyo, who's a long ways away. So, yeah, hey Jose, it's yours, your job, in my opinion. Take it, run with it, and then, man, if he takes that, oh boy, then you start seeing some of the other pieces, you know, kind of fill out. Maybe Spencer Steer could move out to left field. It just makes everything so much better if Jose Barrero pans out. Let's talk about Barrero for a second. What's your kind of thoughts on him, Clay?
Yeah, I agree. And I could see him maybe turning into a utility guy if it doesn't pan out the way that they think it does or it will. He's just one of those guys that projecting him forward is so difficult because we don't know how much he's going to hit. But the tools are there. I could see him in 2 years. I could see it where he's traded and just, you know, buried in the minor somewhere. I could see him being the starting shortstop and everything in between.
Yeah. And then Velo Heen got a really good bat for a catcher. You know, who knows how that'll pan out when he gets to the majors. Man, I feel like he could be a really nice compliment to Tyler Stevenson, especially if you're, you know, going to play Tyler Stevenson, maybe 40, 50 games at first base DH, try not to limit the wear and tear. If he pans out like we hope he can, he could be a really, really big asset to the Reds as the backup catcher, but a backup catcher that plays a lot.
He also tends to walk just about as much as he strikes out, something that's very difficult to find in young players. A really good arm behind the plate. I just love him as the backup catcher.
All right, and then Mike Ciani, this was your guy that you put on here, so I'm going to let you, that you convinced me to put him on here, so you tell me about Ciani.
I just thought he'd be on here because he has that ability to play center field, which the others, I'm not sure if they will. Lefty bat, it just makes sense. Walks at a good clip, doesn't strike out much, has some speed. I don't know if he'll get there, but his kind of ceiling, I think, is a bench bat. I hate to put that as someone's ceiling, but that's just how I see it. So a little speed, good fielder, can play all three spots. It just seems like a good bench bat that's inexpensive.
Yeah, and then Kyle Farmer, hey, the only thing I'll say about this is if Kyle Farmer is on this team, Reds are spending a pretty penny in 2024. So if Kyle Farmer's on the team, I think it's a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Very good. All right, to the bullpen. So start with these three. Just imagine if you could actually get a healthy TJ Antone, Lucas Sims, and Alexis Diaz. All of a sudden you go, oh, wow, that could be a really, really, really good back end of the bullpen, right, Clay?
Yeah, that is incredible. That is exactly how you want it to pan out. Of course, that never happens. At this point, I just don't know about TJ Antone. Two major surgeries. I personally don't want to rely on him at all. He can be the cherry on top if it comes back healthy. Lucas Sims has dealt with a lot of injuries too, but we've seen Alexis Diaz this year, and it's been nothing short of incredible.
Yeah. All right, and then kind of after those three, it's really a crapshoot. We have very different opinions, as you'll see, and we have our own teams here. We have Santillan, Warren, just those guys are going to get every opportunity to stick. So those are their jobs to lose. And then Joe Boyle, who's a fascinating player, just got promoted up to Chattanooga. He's a starter right now, but I think he probably profiles more as a
can't throw strikes, so yeah. Put him in the bullpen.
But he could be an absolutely lethal reliever, no question about it. How fast does he throw? How hard does he throw?
100 for sure. I mean, I don't know how much I trust all of the minor league guns, but yeah, he's right around 100.
And then Levi Stout, he is in AA.
Yep.
Yeah, he's a starter too right now, but we think he could kind of pan out as a reliever. All right. So before we get to our teams, here's kind of the other players we'll just kind of run through. We're not going to go too exhausted in this, but these are kind of the other players in 2024 that are under consideration. Pitchers, we have Connor Phillips, Justin Dunn, Reaver San Martin, Jeff Hoffman, Levi Stout, Vlad Gutierrez, Connor Overton, Ian Jabeau, Bryce Bonin, Joel Kunal, Evan Kravitz, Ricky Karcher, Clay, of those pitchers, who are some guys that you're looking at?
Reaver San Martin has shown enough this year that I'm definitely intrigued. Other than that, you know, if Vlad is your kind of bounce up and down guy, someone's injured, fill in, that you could do a lot worse than that. I'll just say that. Ricky Karcher throws gas and has a lot of movement. He also can't throw strikes. So that guy can put it together. And of course, Connor Phillips, I don't know just how fast he'll move, but they're moving him fast through the system and he's looking incredible. And right now, probably looking like the best piece from the Winker Suarez trade.
Yeah. I feel like if you're watching, everyone below Overton, just a giant crapshoot, flip a coin. Connor Phillips, I think you could maybe put him in that category with Abbott and Williamson as maybe like if one of those three are a legit start, I think you feel pretty good. Mm-hmm. They're kind of in that mix. I think Phillips is really close. I'm with you on Reaver San Martin. I would love for him to carve out a bullpen role. I just didn't feel like we've seen enough to put him on there, but I don't think he's necessarily that far off. Mm-hmm. And then the last guy, Connor Overton, he started out as kind of a joke, you know, when he started, yeah. He was pitching well. I mean, look at these numbers and like his fielding independent pitching, his xERA the last couple years actually looks pretty good. So I hope he can get a couple more starts this year. He's going to, you know, he's got the Reds have control, I think, through like 2027. Be awesome if a guy like that could like carve out, be like a legit fifth man and you could just kind of count on him. So, all right, the bats, we got TJ. This is not as exciting unless TJ Friedl, Alex McGarry, Austin Hendrick, TJ Hopkins, Reese Hines, Max Schrock, Tyler Callahan, Matt Nelson, and Aristides Aquino. Clay, who are you looking at of this list?
I have little interest in this list. TJ Friedl is just a less exciting Jake Fraley. Alex McGarry has hit a lot of home runs, 24-year-old in AA. At least some intrigue there, but I'm not entirely sure. He kind of reminds me of the kind of the rise that like a Josh Van Meter had, you know. TJ Hopkins has been hitting the ball well, but he's repeating the level that he was in last year. You kind of expect that. I'm not the biggest Reese Hines guy, not a Max Schrock believer. Tyler Callahan, I'm out on as well. I think Austin Callahan's even becoming more exciting than Tyler Callahan.
With the Tortugas, right?
Yeah. Matthew Nelson, really an older college bat who hasn't hit, but is a solid defender. And Aquino. I'm not interested in any of these guys impacting the team.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't have a whole lot of hope in that. Austin Hendrick. You just hope maybe he's that guy that it just like clicks for him out of nowhere. Plays a good defensive right field. But hey,
I just skipped over him, Dan. I didn't even realize it did that. Yeah, he's been hitting a little bit better recently. There's just a lot going on with that swing that I don't know. You know, when you get a high schooler out of Pennsylvania, there's a lot of questions. Pennsylvania is a terrible state for baseball. There's no competition there. So maybe it's just going to take him years longer than we realized initially for a first rounder.
Yeah. I mean, there was a reason he was picked that high. So, hey, you know, maybe it'll just all pan out for him. And if it pans out for him, I think he could rise quick and get a shot called to the big leagues because he's been in the system a while. Matt Nelson would be the other guy I'm looking at. I could maybe see him being the backup catcher in 2024 if the Reds just decide to go for an all defensive catcher. I don't think they will because I think they're going to not want to play Stevenson 140 times behind the plate. But what I've seen of Matt Nelson, very, very good defensive catcher. So he definitely at least has that piece going for him if the Reds decide to go that route. All right, let's move on to our 2025 and beyond, a much more exciting list. I'm not going to go through all this, but the bats, Edwin Arroyo, Cam Collier, Jay Allen, Sal Stewart. We had a hard time kind of like those four. Wow, those are good ones. Jose Torres also in there. Logan Tanner, also recent draft pick. Out of this list, who's kind of the guys you are most excited about here, Clay?
Yeah, Edwin Arroyo and Cam Collier are obviously the top two. Jose Torres is kind of the forgotten guy that's still looking good, but Yerlin Confiden's a guy in single A, low A, that I'm pretty excited about. Has been injured a lot this year, but give me those top two, Cam Collier, Edwin Arroyo. There's definitely some good names on this list.
Yeah, yeah. Just, I guess, you know, kind of echo that. I guess I'm interested, does Edwin Arroyo ever remove Elly De La Cruz out of shortstop? That's, you know, he's an incredible defensive shortstop for everything seen. I love Jay Allen. I'd love to see him kind of put it all together and rise.
He just got promoted.
Did he get promoted?
To high A.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. He'll head to Dayton. Breaking news. That'll probably be like 5 days later. But very good. Then the pitchers. Chase Petty at the top of this list. Steve Hajar, Andrew Moore just were acquired in the trades. Out of this list of pitchers, Clay, any thoughts on these guys?
Yeah, a lot of these guys, the way that it's listed, it's about the way I feel about them. Luis May, if he could put it together, he has some electric stuff, just really has really struggled to put it together, but he's in low A. Chase Petty, I really like. I think he's going to turn into more of like the pitcher that Man, I almost said Wade Miley, but that's such a bad comparison. But that type of thing where, like, you don't go out and expect him to get 1,000 strikeouts and just, you know, overpower a lineup, even though he threw 100 in high school. Cool. I just picture him being someone who's really going to be enjoyable to watch pitch. Almost like a Dylan Cease is enjoyable to watch pitch just because he's crafty. There's some interesting names, but Chase Petty's probably at the top of my list.
Yeah, just... I'm excited to see Chase hopefully rise to the system pretty quick. And yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, take a spot in the rotations. I think he's got all the talent. So very good. All right. Here's Nick Kirby's 2024 Red Legs. Ba-da-da-da, drum roll. All right. So my rotation, start with there. I got Alex Wood. I was just kind of looking through the 2024 free agents. I was trying to find a free agent pitcher that was kind of like middle tier, you know, not going to be, I don't think the Reds are probably going to go out unless they have multiple guys just, you know, blow up and they have like two starting pitchers they feel good about. I don't see them going out and getting a frontline starter. Thought Alex Wood might be going. He's honestly just kind of a guy kind of threw in there that kind of fit that mold. But that's kind of what I'm thinking of to add with that. I'm hoping Andrew Abbott's that fifth, but I think there's probably three or four guys that could maybe get into that. Ian Happ is my guy that I'm having take over left field. Just crushed the Reds over the weekend. This was built way before that. So, but yeah, Ian Happ, just he's a free agent 2024. I think that he would fit the Reds so perfect. I think that would be a great fit for the Reds. And then, yeah, the other guy I have, so I have Jonathan Indy actually at first base. I don't know where to put him. I don't think he'll be at second base by then. That's where I put him. And then Max Muncy is a free agent. I thought, hey, he'll be older. He's going to be a lot older. But I think maybe he'd be a guy, maybe if he has a bad year next year, might be a guy, hey, I want to go to Great American, increase my value. Maybe the Reds could get him on, you know, maybe a 2 or 3 year deal. Honestly, maybe kind of like a Nick Castellanos contract the first time around in 2020. Maybe he could be a big bat that would just play really well at Great American. I have Encarnacion Strand and Matt McClain on my bench. I think they probably find a spot. I just wasn't sure who they supplant. I could see McClain taking over as a center fielder. I could see Elia De Cruz taking over at center field. They move Marte to shortstop, and maybe India stays at second base, and then they have Strand in a first base or DH. So, I didn't have Encarnacion Strand, but I think I feel pretty confident that he probably will be a close to everyday player by 2024 if things pan out. And then my bullpen, I didn't actually have them adding any free agents at all to that. The only thing I had is that maybe is a little bit exciting is I had Brandon Williamson getting moved to the bullpen just because he's going to be kind of at that point where you can't stick him back at AAA. Like, he's going to have to, you know, sink or swim. So I think that maybe would work for him. Any critiques to my roster, Clay?
I love Ian Happ. I love that. I've always just been a big Ian Happ fan for some reason. Alex Wood's kind of funny because he's good and bad. Like, it just depends on when you get him, which year, you know, or injured a lot. But I like Alex Wood. I think this is a good team. I mean, the changes I would make are so minor. Like, I would just put Marte at third, Steer to the bench, and McClain at second. But that's it. I mean, and I could even be, you know, changed on that. I would switch India and Muncy as well. And just put Muncy at first instead of India. But I mean, this team looks pretty good. I'm going to personally find a way to get Nick Senzel out of center field though.
Yeah. I go up and down with poor Nick. Alex Wood, honestly, like a guy like Andrew Heaney this year is like, that's the kind, yeah. That's what I wanted to find, but it's so hard to predict in 2024 who's going to be the Andrew Heaney. I have no idea, but right, that's the guy that I would want, you know, the guy with the high upside, maybe some, you know, some high risk, maybe you're getting on a 1 or 2 year deal. That's exactly what I want there. But last point before we move on to yours, I think you're going to kind of see a lot of rotation at this point. Reds are having a lot of position flexibility guys, you know, maybe like Elly De La Cruz is supplanted as a shortstop, but guys like Spencer Cyr, maybe they're playing third base one day, maybe they're playing left field the other. Jonathan India, maybe he's like actually like Max Muncy, who I have on my roster. Maybe he's like Max Muncy is now, where he plays some first base, some second base, some DH, you know, wherever you can kind of get him in the lineup. But obviously, if you have him at first base DH, it makes your defense that much better on that day. I think you're going to start to see a lot more of that with the Reds coming up. And that's something I've been a long advocate of. All right. Clay Snowden's Red Legs. Here we go.
Whoa. World Series roster right here. So again, this is a thought exercise, right? We're going to be very wrong on all this, but what I try to do is put the type of player, which is what you were saying as well. So it may not be this exact player, but think that profile, think that level of player, right? So my rotation, Green, Lodolo, Ashcraft, Brad Keller of the Kansas City Royals. Why? Because he's not going to be super old. He's flashed at times. He's pretty good. He's a vet. He won't be too expensive. And he'll be able to at least eat innings and be a respectable major leaguer. That's kind of the type of player. I just chose Brad Keller. Sue me. Andrew Abbott at the end there. My outfield is Spencer Steer and left. I'm not married to that. 2023, I cheated. Free agent Brandon Nimmo in center field. Dream scenario. We all know the Bruce story.
Love Nimmo.
Nimmo can become the leadoff man if need be. And fills that massive hole at center field, one of the most important positions in all of the sport. Right field, Jake Fraley, Alan Serta, that's a platoon. I'm going to touch on that in a bit. In the infield, around the horn, first base, Christian Encarnacion, Strand, power bat. Matt McClain, I think he's going to be a second baseman. That's just how his profile fits. Elly De La Cruz, superstar shortstop. Noel V. Marte, young Manny Machado, right? Isn't that what the kids are saying? Behind the plate, Tyler Stevenson, DH, Jonathan India. My bench, Jose Barrero, kind of the infield Swiss Army knife, I think. And perfect example, if somebody needs to get a break at third, maybe you move Steer to third. India to second, McClain to left, or whatever. Randall Grinchek, this is a guy who I want on this roster, and Nick can't understand why. I made him change it last minute to get him on. I actually think Grinchek would be a great platoon if Serta doesn't pan out. He can play all three outfield positions. Right now, he's making $10 million. He's going to come way down on that once his deal expires with the Rockies. And he's the type of guy that could put up 20, 25 home runs. He won't be uber expensive. He's okay in the outfield, a vet. And I think that's where things start to change is we can't just fill this roster with a bunch of young guys, which is pretty much what we've done. But you are going to see some vets signed. And I think Grinchek, okay, let's say Spencer Steer doesn't work out and left. Okay, well, now you have a starting level left fielder as well. I just like the insurance he provides. I like the power he can provide. And I think the contract will be good. And here we go. I'm spending some money on the bullpen. Phil Mattoon, right now with the Astros, formerly with Cleveland, a vet, a really good player, somebody of that caliber. Get an established guy who won't cost $10 million. Brandon Williamson's a lefty. I would rather replace that with any vet lefty help. You know, somebody like a Drew Pomeranz type career arc. Not Drew Pomeranz, but that type of career arc. Levi Stout. Maybe somebody who can eat a few innings. There it is. That is the 2024 Red Legs for me. What's the win projection total on this? 112?
I think they're pushing the Mariners, the 2001 Mariners for sure. Yeah, no, I love Nemo. Love Nemo. If they could get him, I think that'd be the kind of, I think if they're looking at a guy this offseason, he'd be the kind of guy if he maybe falls on the market a little bit, maybe you're able to get a good value contract out of him. Or anyone kind of similar. And, all right. Well, that's about all we got for this show. Clay, any final thoughts?
No, it seems kind of foolish that we're talking about something 2 years down the road in August. But, hey, that's where the Reds have put us. It's an exciting time in a way to be a Reds fan. It all just depends on your mentality. Like, you can choose not to be excited or excited about the future. It's literally up to you. And I don't really care. Either one you choose is fine. But you and I are both choosing to be excited about this team. There's plenty to be excited about. And I really hope that they make that type of move in 2023, a Brandon Nimmo type signing. Hey, fans, listen, we're serious. We really are. Here's some money. We're going to show it. Established player. Start to build confidence in the fan base and in the locker room.
And some of that, too, I think could also be built on some extensions as well. I think that
sure,
could also
sure.
And they should be. We don't ever want the Reds to be doing things strictly for to make fans happy, because that's never a good strategy. But I think you could be kind of kill two birds with one stone. You go and you extend Tyler Stevenson this offseason. Hey, and you know what? Both India and Stevenson might be a good year to extend them. Last year, maybe not. They're kind of high off those big breakout seasons. This year, they kind of have seen how ugly baseball can be with injuries. And, you know, hey, maybe they're like, okay, yeah, I'm a little more open to an extension than I was 12 months ago. So, well, Clay, this has been a blast. Thanks so much for
I love this.
As always, if you have not subscribed to Late Night Reds Talk on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts, please do that. Subscribe, like, smash the like button, review, all that stuff. Give us 5 stars. Helps us grow the show and hopefully continue to provide you more content like this. All right, for Clay, I'm Nick. Thanks for joining us tonight. Go Reds.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.